Who gave me permission to do this? Oh my God. Sometimes we're gonna laugh and sometimes we're gonna cry. That's just the way it goes.
If you're ready to change the narrative, shift your consciousness, you are in the right place. Welcome to the Jackie Minsky Show.
Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to the Jackie Minsky Show. If you are new, thank you so much for tuning in. And if you're with me for a while, thank you so much for coming back. I have a great guest for you guys today. Her name is Annie Parker. She is a Reiki master, theta healer, hypnotherapist, shamanic practitioner, manifestation coach, astrologer, dating coach also. I mean, the list goes on and on, and I'm so excited to have you here, Annie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jackie. Finally, I'm so excited. We chat all the time, but now we get to chat on the show. So yes.
So Annie, I'm going to take you to the beginning because I know that before all this amazing stuff that you're doing now, and thank you for doing this kind of work in the world, before you got into spirituality and all this stuff, you were actually a nutritionist. So I want to take it back and I want to ask you to tell me a little bit more about Annie growing up and how you transitioned from Annie growing up, nutritionist, to then spirituality.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's interesting because I grew up in a teeny tiny town on the border of Canada and New York, like literal horse and buggy style, like going down the street even today. So when I go home, I always kind of joke that it's like camping, but in a house, especially because I live in LA now, you know, so it's like big shock when I go home. And my family still lives there. But, you know, it's an area that's like a little more poverty, and that's how I grew up. And so, you know, one of the first things I had to start doing was be conscious of my financial literacy and money mindsets. And those were things I started catching as I, you know, I went to college for marketing and communications, my undergrad, and then I actually got straight into pharmaceuticals. You know, I didn't really know what I was going to do. And someone was like, oh, you're cute, do pharmaceuticals. That's good for, you know, straight out of college. And I did that for a number of years. And the more I did it, the more, because this was before I realized I was an empath, it would really weigh on my soul that people weren't being given the tools to take care of themselves properly or to avoid, you know, certain ailments that could be avoided through other means besides medicine. So I'm sitting there passing out medicine like candy going, I'm making so much money and I hate all of this, right? So I went back and got my master's in nutrition because that was kind of, I was like, we need to start back from the bottom. And then I also, to rewind, I was also told I wasn't even smart enough to get into college. So the fact that I was the first person in my family to actually have a master's degree, every time someone told me I couldn't do something, you know, we always have a choice. We can play victim to that and sit and be on the hamster wheel of that mindset that planted like a little seed in the back of our brain, or we can give it a big F you and say, I'm going to do it anyway. Right. So I became a nutritionist and then I became a fitness pro and kind of did all the external things, right, to be healthy, working out, you know, looking, I was a fitness model and traveled all over the world. And I'm so blessed to have gotten to do that. But I was like, you know, I'd started doing spiritual work about 12 years ago, going through a divorce. Mm. So that was when, and you know, it started as, you know, I went to a Reiki master because I wanted to kind of ease some of the anxiety around the divorce itself and around the marriage. And I was like, oh, this is so peaceful. Like, I want to learn how to do this for other people, right? And then theta healing is really starting to change some of those mindsets, you know, at a little bit of a hypnotherapy level, but really at like, you know, you kind of dive into the theta brainwaves and start to shift some of those things, you know, on that level. And that was so impactful for me that I was like, oh my gosh, like, I want to learn this too, because it's so helpful. I want to teach other people how to do it. So all the time, my healers became my teachers, you know, my shamanic Well, she was a shaman. So my shaman that I was with for 4 years, you know, she ended up being my teacher too. And it just, it ended up being an all-encompassing thing where for a long time I was, you know, doing my fitness model work and hosting work and all this, like, you know, presentation work where it was all about the physical, and people really didn't know about any of the work I was doing behind the scenes at all, because I didn't really feel comfortable coming out of the spiritual closet. And I didn't feel confident in myself that was my purpose until the last 2 years. And all of a sudden my hosting and modeling job stopped, and I was forced to confront myself and go, like, literally, this is what you have. This is your gift that you've been given. So you either use it now at the time when people need it most, or you're wasting your life, basically.
There's so much to unpack. I'm like, yes. So first of all, you know, that's beautiful, right? Because they always say when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And for you, you started going through it first, you know, had teachers, and now you're getting into that, you know. And it's interesting because I didn't know you were a shamanic practitioner. And like a few weeks ago, I was like, I need a shamanic practice. Because, you know, like I came out of the spiritual closet, just like, you know, you said, I came out of it maybe a month ago. I don't know if you saw my Instagram post. Like, I was like, you know what? I mean, I came out of it for a few reasons, which we're going to dive into today. But it's interesting how the collective is really stepping up. And if you look at what's happening in 3D, we really are like, we have the warriors, the light workers, we have no choice. The divine mother source is like, you guys, like, that's what you're here for. Like, wake up, right? So I love that so much. So for anyone who may be unfamiliar with what Reiki is, you know, tell us a little bit more about what is Reiki. And you know, I know that you can send healing to someone using Reiki. So let's get a little bit into that. So how would you describe Reiki to someone who doesn't know exactly like what it is?
Yeah, of course. So I've always been really into learning about other cultures and you know, just learning as much as I can. Obviously, I'm a Gemini moon. So like you see, I love to learn different things, and I'm like, ooh, that and human design. Okay, like let's dive in, right? So Reiki was really one of the first modalities I had ever experienced. And it's a Japanese energy healing that they use there. You know, they use it really to prevent, you know, because they're very preventative in their methods as well, right? So it is using life force energy to move energy around. So we get trapped energy, right? So say the easiest way I always explain it is like, you know, when we're stressed and we start to feel the tension in our shoulders. So, you know, someone starts rubbing our shoulders and we're like, oh, you know, because we're kind of carrying all this right here. That stress gets built up and we start actually feeling it in our shoulders as if we're carrying the weight of the world, because on a personal level, we are sometimes, you know, but that happens in other areas of the body with other things too, right? We have all of our chakras, all of our energy centers, and we get certain trapped emotions or memories or traumas there, where Reiki, using life force energy, and this is literally, you know, energy from the earth, and it's not my energy that I'm giving you. I'm just a channel that's, you know, giving you, it's almost like I always see it as like an energy transfusion. You got blood transfusions, here's an energy transfusion. It's coming from the heavens and the earth. It's all coming through my hands and with, you know, such a loving way to move up and through your body to get things flowing. And if there is a trapped emotion or trapped anything in there, let's work to move it, you know, through and out, basically. And sometimes people cry, sometimes people feel tremendously lighter after, sometimes people have to go to the bathroom after. It depends on, you know, how your body chooses to purge that day.
I was gonna say let's do it live, and then you're like, bathroom. I'm like, maybe towards the end of the episode, or else. I'm like, or else I'm gonna wind up going to the potty like right at the beginning. So I love that. Maybe we'll try later, but let's dive into that, because what does it take energetically for you? Because, you know, I know how to channel, and that's something I also doubted for a very long time. And I know how much energy takes, right? And it's interesting because we're tapping into source as we're doing these things, but our human gets exhausted because we become the vessel, right? So I'm curious, because I've never done Reiki. How much energy does it take from you? And what is your intention when you are doing Reiki for someone? I always found that so fascinating, by the way.
That's such a good question. And honestly, it takes nothing from me. If anything, because the energy is moving through me, it really just kind of lights me up. And I can get exhausted from readings at times, but never through energy work or giving any kind of life force energy or Reiki like that. Also one of the things that I'm really big on teaching is protecting your energy and boundaries, which is something that empaths generally aren't that aware of, because often it's not until around 30, around our Saturn return, where you even realize that you are an empath and possibly soaking up other people's energies, right? It's a little more common and known now, because like you said, it's more mainstream and more talked about and things like that. But oh my gosh, like when I was a child, I would have stomach aches going into an enclosed mall or a large enclosed store because there was so much energy in there. And I would start getting a stomach ache being in there even as a child and not understand why, or I would start getting dizzy. Mm. And yeah, so, you know, we have all of these people that like don't understand why they're feeling certain things. And so when it comes to energy work though, because I've had to leave rooms on Clubhouse because I was like, ooh, the energy in here is whack. You know what I mean? And go shower, go spray myself down with salt and moon water, like all the things that I do to cleanse myself. But with energy work, you know, I do a process of cleansing before and after energy work, but I never feel exhausted after, to answer that question.
I love that. I love that so much. Guarding your energy. You know, that's something that I'm going to say it because I know you're going to understand and resonate. Because of mainstream, I feel like there's a lot of people who think they understand energy, and it's become like the word manifestation has become so mainstream that I almost dislike it. You know, like I know you could resonate, you know. So, you know, when I used to do Clubhouse spaces and I was like, oh, manifestation, Jackie. And I was like, it's a little more than just if I was just teaching you how to manifest, I'm actually damaging you, because I'm teaching you how to use something just for a selfish reason when I really want to expand you into energy, period. Right. But let's dive into the shamanic stuff, because, you know, there's a lot of people who have questions about that. And what exactly is, you know, a shaman and a shamanic practitioner?
Okay. So for me, right. And my grandmother was actually part Indigenous. So, you know, there was an element of it that I felt very familiar with and that I felt very comfortable with. But to me, I don't call myself a shaman because, you know, I think you get given certain titles and certain names. There's no certification for certain things. You know what I mean? I've never been through any big like ceremony where I'm like passed down that title. So I'm not comfortable using it, where some people are very comfortable calling themselves a shaman, and that's totally fine for them. Right. But what I do, feel comfortable with is knowing that, you know, there's an element of my work that has been passed down to me, the journeying that is shamanic journeying, and I use that right in both my hypnotherapy and so I do an entire 2-hour session with people generally, and it's a releasing and heart opening session. You know, I've also called it like cord cutting, because some people, it really like, it's kind of like tricky to find out what people resonate with, right? Because you have to resonate with, you know, kind of like manifestation. You and I, you know what I mean, don't necessarily love that word, but that's what people resonate with sometimes. Kind of like, you know, I triggered a few people this morning with using twin flames because I don't enjoy that terminology. because it's been so marketed, right? It's been marketed into something it's not anymore. And so, you know, I definitely, you know, use that this morning because it's like, it's not what you think it is sometimes. And so the element of journeying to a different dimension where you can have conversations. And this was one of the most beautiful things I ever learned from my teacher. Journeying to have conversations, you know, and this is what some people don't understand. We're not journeying back to the point of trauma because we don't want to relive anything. We're journeying back to who you were at that point. So you can have a conversation with you or anyone that you need to have a conversation with the higher self of in a safe space where no ego is involved. Because when we're in the fifth dimension, speaking to the higher self, you speak in a different way than you would speak here on earth to another human being that doesn't have the capacity to hear you and listen, right? And some people are like, well, that doesn't really work. You can't have a conversation with someone's higher self. I don't know how many times, you know, I cut the cords for, and, you know, call it releasing, call it cutting cords. Some people don't like the term cutting. It's just a releasing, right? We're releasing certain emotions and resentments that you don't need to be holding on to, right? Because that's weighing us down. And the part that plays in manifestation, it's almost like an energetic feng shui. Feng shui says you get rid of anything that you no longer need or use or love. So when you're holding on to resentments that you're not using or needing or loving, right? We're making room for something new to come in. That's all. So I was working on, he's actually a celebrity astrologer, a really good friend of mine. And he had been divorced for a year and a half, had had no communication in a year and a half with his ex-wife. And he really felt hurt and a lack of closure. So we did a releasing ceremony around the resentments that were there and whatever else needed to be released. And 2 days later, after we had a conversation with her higher self, she called him and said, I miss you, because people do feel when you take your power back and release that situation. And some people don't like it because they like having that, you know, that power.
I'm gonna have to ask a question. So I'm mind blown, because a few months ago when I was in meditation, my higher self took me through that meditation alone. And then without realizing that's shamanic stuff, I actually teach that within my course. So I've seen this firsthand. I just wasn't aware that that's 5D communication. Now, here's my question, because I've done this with other people. You know, I have a client who her father and her didn't talk. You know, we did the 5D meditation. We go through the 4D, the 5D, because I feel like the 4D, you connect with self and then you go into the 5D together, right? Or at least that's how Soar showed it to me when I was in meditation and I was given the gift. That was something gifted to me in my meditation from Source. And I didn't know that that's, you know, the same thing. But my question is, I've been, you know, I have a twin flame. Some people know, and you're one of them. You've helped me before. And I've gone into the 5D with my twin flame many times. And there's no resolution. It's almost just like an open conversation. And it's very healing. There's no ego. There's a lot of love. And I've done cord cutting. My question would be, what happens if someone else's higher self does not want to let go?
Okay. And first, I want to touch on something you said. Yes, having those 5D conversations, because I learned it, you know, from my shaman teacher. I think calling it shamanic journeying is just like semantics and, like, you know what I mean, different titles for things. And that's my way of paying respect to how I learned it and how it was given to me, right? So that's the only reason why I use that terminology. But so this is interesting, because I do, you know, on a daily basis, a lot of my own cord cutting and my own conversations like that. But just like as an astrologer, sometimes I can't read my own chart, or you can't read your own tarot cards with a correct perspective, because so much emotion is involved. And even when you're in that space of 5D or higher self, there is still an element of you there. And that is why you need someone else that's outside that space to take you through it at times. Now, there, and I have seen this where, and I said this on the video that I did this morning, people often choose to reconnect after cords have been cut and emotions and things have been released, because it's uncomfortable for them to take their full power back and stand on their own, right? So they reconnect because that's what's comfortable for them. That's what they know. Sometimes the cycle of this is more comfortable for people. I will say, if this journey, as some people like to call it, is ever abusive, manipulative, or any of these things, this is not your journey. You do not continue. You know, we have the power, right? As divine feminine energy, we are whole. We are whole, right? We are not a half. I've never worked on someone and been like, oh yeah, this person only has half of their soul, half of their energy, right? Like, now, if you get the right divine counterpart, are you stronger together? Can you be a stronger force? Absolutely. And that's the thing. I actually think that the twin flame merging is more about mission and purpose than the romantic, you know, theme picture that we've been painted, because I think people have more of a love story with their soulmates often.
Yes. So. And I want to dive into that. Here's the biggest misconception with twin flames that I've learned. Cause I'm actually like, my twin flame triggered the crap out of me. My twin flame and I, there's so much love, but we just, I mean, he's the only person that I, and he gave me the nickname Chucky because I was like, you know, like the Chucky doll. And it's because he just drives me, just, he's the only person on, you know, for the most part, I'm super calm. I'm all these things, but with him, I just want to strangle him, because we're supposed to show each other parts of ourselves that are still broken. Like your twin flame shows you like, hey, that's where you're still broken, right? So before you meet your soul flame, that's a new one. So before you meet your soulmate, get that together. And it's interesting because when my twin flame and I parted and I'm doing all the 5D stuff, I do have a soulmate in my life. But even though there were still very little bits and pieces of healing left to do, like I did similar things that I did with my twin flame to my soulmate, my soulmate handled it differently, because my soulmate kind of showed me like, I did the work. Are you going to heal, or are you going to go back to your, are you going to go back into that cycle? Right. So the twin flame cycle, just like you said, it's two, well, technically I think two souls split into two, but when they do the work, they become one whole human, right? Healthy human that then can, align with their soulmate. So I love that you said that. So for anyone listening, like, what's the best way to know twin flame versus soulmate?
It's interesting because I've seen, you know, there is an element of feeling at home with both a soulmate and a twin flame. And the thing is, a twin flame or a soulmate doesn't even necessarily have to be a romantic partner. They can be, you know, a sibling, they can be a relative, a friend, anything where you meet and you know that you have, there is extreme growth and you have a mission together. I think the twin flame is more rare. And I even see it, like, if you think about actual twins, right? Not everyone is having sets of twins, right? It's actually, because if you think about it, I could be in this lifetime and my twin isn't necessarily in this lifetime with me right now, but we may have spent other lifetimes together, and maybe there might have been something I need to do here in this lifetime that my twin did not reincarnate for right here, right now.
Powerful. that resonated for me so much.
For everyone that's out there. And I almost feel like there's, you know, this story of like every single person on this earth right now is searching for their twin, and you're not whole unless you have your twin. It's like, it's leaving a constant empty feeling that doesn't need to be there.
I want to point that out. Don't look for these relationships. They will present themselves. Like I didn't like choose him and say, hey, that's my twin flame. First of all, I never told this story, not even to my twin flame. The first time I saw my twin flame, I was 16 and I was in a crowd of friends and something like turned me around like a gust of wind, let's call it. And I turn around, I saw him walking out and I was like, who is that? Now, mind you, I'm 16, so I don't know what's happening to me on a spiritual level. I'm a baby, right? And I was like, oh, that was weird. But I saw him. And then every relationship in my life, he was always a friend of a friend of a friend. I was like, I think that's the guy that I saw when I was 16, but I didn't know how to put it together because I was 16. So I didn't know how to piece it together. But then what happened for me, and I'm curious to know if this is possible. I mean, it happened, but you know, I'm curious to hear from, you know, cause you're in the spiritual work deeply, is when him and I had our first meetup date, whatever you want to call it. And we were in the car, we looked at each other and in that car, time stopped for me. Like I felt like a warp kind of thing. And it took me back to that moment when I was 16, where it confirmed that feeling of what the hell was that. And even in that moment, I didn't know what it was. I only realized all these things after the triggering and the fighting and the love. Then I was like, holy crap, I think that's my twin flame. So then I went to do past life regression. And even to past life regression, I didn't go for the sake of my twin flame, which anyone listening, please don't do things for the sake of, you know, confirming that relationship. No. I went to actually prove the hypnotherapist wrong. I was like, I'm going to go prove this lady wrong. And when I went, he showed up in many lifetimes. So when you said that just now of, you know, sometimes your twin flame and you are alive at the same time, but the purpose is different. That's the painful part. And I think that's the painful part that I'm going through is he's very much in 3D. And you know what I mean by that. He's 3D. I don't know if he even understands half of the verbiage that you and I are using, if he ever even heard this episode. And for me, I'm so deep in the spiritual work that I can't stay back and drag him through the spiritual journey. And that's been the painful cord cutting for me. So I love that you said that. And soulmates, yeah, soulmates, there are soulmate clients, soulmate friends, you know, we're on a mission, you know, you and I could be soulmates, like, you know, from another lifetime, maybe we did like white medicine together, right? So there's so much that goes into it. And I think, and I love that you did that today on your Instagram, by the way, because I feel like when people are in toxic relationships, they label it as a twin flame so they can stay. And by the way, anyone listening, I actually ran away from my twin flame when things got toxic. I didn't say, oh, he's my twin flame, I'm going to fight with him tooth and nail. No, I said goodbye. Like, so I want to dive into that because I think that's important in dating for people to know. Don't label that's the sad thing, that these terms have become mainstream. They're actually hurting so many of us. What would you say to someone who's dating someone and they think it's their twin flame? What's one way to know? Is there a way to know that's your twin flame without labeling your twin flame?
If someone is in any way being, you know, abusive, manipulative, gaslighting, you know, anything like that, that's, you know, this is a mirror. Is that how you're treating yourself? You know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure that lack of respect, unless you are terribly disrespecting yourself, is not really your mirror, right? So, I mean, look, and I think a lot of people are confusing them with karmic people that are here to teach us boundaries and lessons, right? So there's a big difference. But I think what's happened is the spiritual world has found a way to capitalize and market some of these terms, right? And think about it this way. This is kind of what came to me, and the reason I felt so compelled to say something about it was, if someone is on a journey and they're talking about runners and chasers and this and that, and it's off and on and this and that, So all of a sudden, anyone in an off and on relationship that's confused, right? Because they haven't really tapped in with their themselves and their own intuition to go, okay, something's not right here, right? Because a lot of times we do what I call leading with loneliness when we really just want a partner, because we all crave and desire a partner. There is no shame in admitting that. We are born for partnership. We're made for partnership. We are. That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that twin flame partnership that we think has to be so chaotic. Because like I said, I feel like that love story can be, is often a very beautiful soulmate relationship. And so unfortunately, when you sell a journey to someone and you sell it to them as if it's going to be chaotic, it's going to be up and down, and you're a reader or a healer or something, what does that do? That ensures the person keeps coming back to you looking for answers.
Mm-hmm.
So they have found a way to make sure me, if people come to me, like if you know, I always say to my clients, because after I do a 2-hour session, they're like, what next? Do I come back to you? And I'm always like, if you feel the need, but hopefully it's one and done. You know what I mean? I have some clients that come back just because they enjoy it so much, and that's totally fine too. But like, I don't want you to come back to me forever.
I love that. So I need to stop you there, because that was so powerful. You know, anyone listening, that's how you know your mentor, coach, spiritual practitioner is the real deal. Because if there are people out there who enable this kind of thing, like, yes, we need to keep doing this, right? And they're charging you so much money for these things. And now it's, you're kind of like an addict for this narrative versus actually understanding the experience and doing the deep work that you do and saying, hey, you can do it on your own. You don't need me, but if you do, I'm here, but we don't need to. So that was such a powerful moment that you just said. So I just really wanted to thank you for that, because that's so important. Nobody talks about that, right? Nobody talks about that, right? And I always say this, and it's funny, but it's not funny. And to anyone listening, there's nothing wrong with therapy, right? I've tried it when I went through my trauma, and I did it for X amount of time. For me, it didn't really work, because the therapist actually was bringing the trauma back up. So I went and did, we have a friend I did like some shamanic stuff with, you know, who are our mutual friend. But to anyone listening, I always say, if you're with your therapist for the same topic for more than 3 to 4 years, your therapist is almost enabling you at that point. Because I know people that are in therapy for the same thing, right? Unless it's like some major, major war trauma or something like that. Be very mindful and careful that people are not using your trauma against you, your narrative against you, your toxic relationship against you for service, right? So that was so powerful. Thank you. Thank you for that. Let's dive into my favorite topic, your favorite topic, with the verbiage. Let's really talk about manifestation and how someone can manifest and attract a soulmate, or let's even forget the narrative for a second and just a loving, healthy relationship. But before we do that, what is your definition of manifestation?
So we're always manifesting, good or bad. You know what I mean? Manifesting to me is just what you are attracting, what your energy is attracting, right? And for me, that, you know, since we're using journey, that journey looked like learning how to be in my feminine energy, learning how to be comfortable in it, how to sink into it. Because like I had mentioned, you know, when you grow up at a certain, you know, whether it's poverty or just like a traumatic upbringing when you're young, very often you are in survival mode, and that kind of pushes you to be a little more in the masculine, which is not necessarily a receiving energy. So learning how to receive, learning how to be open, right, are all things that really I work on with people as part of that manifestation process to attract.
I love that. Embodying, like I always think of like embodying, you know, and I just want to quickly touch up on it. People think, like one time in one of my courses or my masterminds, whatever you call them. I'm so bad with terminology these days. I drew two circles, and in one circle I wrote, "You are here." And then I drew a line and I wrote, "Your manifestation's out there." Because a lot of times people are manifesting something outside of themselves, right? And then I drew another circle and I wrote, "You are here." And then I put their manifestation in the same circle, and everyone was like staring at me like, "What does that mean?" I'm like, it means if you say your manifestation is on the way, it's going to stay on the way. Like, that's going to be a very long delivery. You know, it's going to go through like customs. Whereas if you embody, and you know, I've done this so many times with money specifically, because I'm a single mom. Anytime you live in the frequency of the now, the relationship, the finances, whatever it is, in the now, you attract because you are, right? And, you know, they say the matrix, your reality has to catch up. So I love that, you know, you brought the awareness to the energy of it. So how do you, because I know you are a spiritual dating coach. So how do you tell clients that come to you, maybe let's say after they do the cord cutting and really do the healing, what's the next step for someone after the healing to attract a loving relationship?
Ooh, okay. So I really, going back to that word embodying, because it's really good to me, and it made me think of the word juicy. So a lot of my clients think I'm crazy, but because I have male and female clients, of course, but you know, I just more specifically work when it comes to dating with my women, and you know, bringing their power back to them and making them realize that they are their energy and not all this external stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, people are look at me and they're like, "Oh, you know, you must get all the guys." It's like, when I want to, sometimes nobody talks to me. It depends on my energy. You know what I mean? Like, I can go months and no one speaks to me. So it depends, you know, that depends on where my energy's at, you know? And so I want them to be extremely aware of, you know, what they want, how powerful they are, right? Their boundaries, because that is something that we are not naturally taught, right? And like, think about our parents. Our parents never think they have to have boundaries with their kids. I raised you, I can do what I want, right? So that's like one of the first things we have to do is learn boundaries with our parents, because otherwise we're not going to have them with anybody else either. So boundaries, right? What are your boundaries? Like, what are your, you know, what are your intentions? But then I'm like, okay, well, if you really want to attract, you got to start feeling juicy within yourself. So I do talk to my clients a lot about self-pleasure and using self-pleasure to manifest and increase that vibration, visualizing while you are having orgasm. I don't know what kind of podcast this is, so I'll just... I'm like trying to keep it.
We are as spiritual and woo-woo as they get. So this is right on topic.
Okay, good. So I know. And it's kind of funny because I work with a lot of older women. And so I'm like, I know this might sound uncomfortable, but I'm going to say, if you have some time alone, you know, and I kind of walk them down like what it looks like. So
you know, it's so funny because everyone's like, this is going to be funny, but everyone's like, you've been single for so long. I'm like, well, I don't really need anyone because, you know, like I'm okay with myself in that department. And that's the power of it, right? Because a lot of people in today's society don't understand the power of sexual energy, the exchange, right? Like, when I have sex with someone, right, it's not just my body that I'm giving my full heart, my full spirit. So the way I have sex is completely different. And when I see, you know, I have girlfriends and guy friends, and when I see them, and there's nothing wrong with it, by the way, I think it's a matter of choice, what you can handle an energy boundary, right? Like for me, my energy can't handle that, right? Because I take it very, you know, I kind of drink the spiritual juices, you want to, whatever that can sound so even weirder, forget that. But so I see so many people mixing so much energy and not even understanding and taking a pause to understand that I kind of like to think of it as invisible little bubbles of energy, right? So, and it happens if you go to the supermarket and someone looks at you, that energy can follow into your field. Now imagine what happens if you're energetically exchanging sexual energy, how much of that person's field is entering your field, right? So we have to really take sexual energy very seriously. But I want to dive into that because I've heard about it, sex magic, right? That's what they call it. So whether it's self-pleasure or with your partner, which I know so many conscious couples, they actually manifest quicker when they do that. But let's dive into that, because what should we, or how can one practice that? And is it like in the moment it's about to happen, we set an intention? Like, talk us through for anyone listening who may not understand how to do that.
So the purpose of it is, like, you know, we talk a lot about manifesting in terms of, you know, journaling, visualizing, you know, writing stuff down, burning the paper, all the things, right? We have all these things, but then, like, people really kind of forget, like, one key element of it is, like, A, yes, energetically, you have to make the space for your manifestations, because otherwise something could come, one of your manifestations could come right to you and, you know, could pass you by, basically. Mm-hmm. But if you're not open to accepting it, but literally, you know, if we're just sitting there writing down the things that, even if you're writing it in present tense, right? So we're writing in present tense. I have $100,000 right now. You know, I this, I that, and all of that, right? You can do all of those things. But if you don't really feel it, if you don't feel juicy about that and blissful, and just like when I'm doing a manifestation, even if I'm not doing, you know, sex magic or whatever, it's kind of funny, because like when I visualize something or I get a vision in my head of something that like I feel is like, whoa, like this is happening. You know what I mean? I start to do like, I almost have like an end zone dance, like a little football dance. And I'll just like I'll just kind of do this little shimmy out of nowhere in my kitchen or something. And it's like, whoa, I felt that, you know, because that, you know, dancing is huge. Like you have to feel like it is done, mm-hmm. right? Like you literally, if you're having a hard time getting into that feeling of pure bliss and ecstasy and joy, what is the best way to get into that feeling? Sex. So, and, you know, really building that own pleasure, whether it's with yourself or with a partner, because I've absolutely done it with partners as well, you know, being very intentional. So, and they knew what I was doing. And basically, like, of course, like we, especially with the more intentional you are, you know, the better you are with manifesting. Like you can't send the universe mixed signals and expect mm-hmm. your manifestation. So the more intentional you are, and I always even use the example, you know, I thought I was being intentional about what I wanted in a partner. And I was like, you know, this, those are my hard boundaries, like my hard, like must haves. So I go on a date and this guy was amazing. And he opened the doors for me. He wouldn't let me pay. He was funny. We liked all the same movies and music, conversation, everything. And then he told me he doesn't believe in monogamy. And I was like, oh, I forgot to put that one on the list, apparently. You know what I mean? I would have never dreamt in a million years that I would have to add that to the list. But you know what? And it's funny, you know, because he wanted...
Go. Finish, because I have the file. Oh, but similar story.
Yeah, he wanted to continue dating. But if I would have said yes to that, that would have sent a mixed message to the universe. So I loved and appreciated and enjoyed with all of my heart, enjoyed everything he did. And I was like, more of that, please. I loved all of that. But no, I won't go on another date with you.
Like, mm-hmm. that's the test, right? Like, are you going to take this? Or are you going to trust that your juiciness is like right around the corner, right?
Yes. Mm.
So,
with that, it's interesting because, you know, what I see people do often too is they make certain superficial things or appearances part of their like hard, because I tell people, like, you know, you have your hard like must haves, and then you can kind of have your soft ones over there too. You know what I mean? And I see people put a little too much emphasis on what that person's going to look like sometimes. Because what I've had to tell a lot of my clients, because I have clients from all over the world of all cultures. It's like, if you can, you know, and for some people they can't, and that's okay. If you can, try to be open, because they may not look like what you think they're going to look like, you know, and, you know, if you want tall, you want tall, you know, it's like that, that is what it is. But I mean, it's funny because I even had to check myself, because one of my girlfriends who's also intuitive, she's like, I see you with a blonde man. And I was like, no, I don't date blondes. And then I like, kind of, I was like, I don't like anyone that looks like me. Thanks. And I kind of had to check myself, because it's like, well, you know, that is not one of my non-negotiables. So chill.
I know a blonde man. If you want, I could connect you offline. We could talk about that off the podcast. I do know blonde man, so if you're open to it, he's very powerful.
Jackie the matchmaker.
Jackie's just matchmaking all of a sudden. So anyone listening that is in the healing, right? So embodying, you know, the energy and all the things, right? And let's say, right, it is a twin flame or a toxic partner that does come back. Do you believe that people can change? Like, do you believe a twin flame or whatever, or a partner in general, you part with them, you do the work, and then they come back? How do we know that they've done the work?
And this is where, you know, when I say I don't necessarily want people coming back to me forever, it's because part of my mission is to teach people to tap into their own intuition and not need me to tap into their intuition all the time. I want you to be able to tap into your intuition. And sometimes that's a little difficult, because that means putting our emotions aside to tap into it, right? Because our emotions try to override everything that's going on here. And now I will, in the 12 years that I've been doing this kind of work, the only time I have ever seen someone leave and separate and come back together and it work magically is literally if they separated at like a young age, or because of circumstance, like, you know, because of distance, or someone moved away or something like that. And then years later, some kind of, you know, circumstance or whatever brought them back together. And the person realized, like, that's the one that got away, right? That's my person. And right away, that person like makes a grand gesture of some sort, and or it says, you know, let's be together, let's get married, let's do something. You know what I mean? If someone has come back more than once, right? Because this is like a one-time separation. I believe sometimes a one-time separation, you know, because one of my friends has been married for 20 years, and her husband, when they were in college, they separated for 1 year. They tried it, didn't work, right? And then they came back together and they've been married and best friends ever since. So yes, a one-time separation where, you know, maybe you were just young, or maybe there's distance or something like that, where nothing too traumatic happened. It was just kind of a, you know, maybe this isn't for us. And then you're like, no, but this is for us. That's a strong yes. You're getting a strong yes from both ends, right? Where you know the other person is in it to win it. If the person comes back and you're still kind of questioning whether they're in it to win it or where you're standing with them, if it's not a hard yes, it's a no. And then if they've come back more than once, you know, and they just keep leaving and come back, leaving, no, any more than one separation, and it is off the table for me. Like, just pull the plug after.
Yeah. That's kind of what happened with I guess, my twin flame, I decided to take that time away completely for a year. And in that year, I said, you know what, I'm going to work on myself. I was alone. My career blossomed. Like, I really just did my thing. And then we reconnected and I was like, I think he became more problematic. I was like, I don't think he got the memo. So then we parted again. And I was just like, you know what? I don't think he got the memo. Like, I think he's just comfortable where he is. Again, you know, two different journeys. And for anyone listening, and I know you're going to resonate with what I'm going to say, and then I'm going to ask you a very powerful question. For anyone listening, you have to understand soul contracts. I made the decision, not an easy decision, but that I wanted to end this soul contract because I know he's my twin flame. And I know I've been with him for many lifetimes, but I had one of my spiritual mentors ask me, she goes, you can manifest him. She goes, but look at how many lifetimes he's not changing. And I used to joke with him and I'm like, you know, you're the same that you were in the last lifetime. Like, I used to tell him this all the time. And he's like, well, that's a good thing. And I'm like, questionable. But anyway, so she asked me, she goes, you can manifest it if you want. You're a powerful manifester. She goes, but do you want to keep learning the same lesson? So when I decided to do cord cutting, and I definitely have to do one with you because whoever did mine, I don't know what happened. It cut it and then it opened it again. And we could take that offline. But I made the decision that I want to make space for my soulmate in this lifetime and then future lifetimes. Like in future lifetimes, I don't want my twin flame coming back to relearn that lesson. Like, I got it. I had to find the self-love. I had to pick myself up. I had to heal myself because, you know, he was triggering me or he was the mirror for me, but he didn't do his end of the contract. So therefore I decided I don't want another lifetime of the same lesson. And so that's why I think for anyone listening, if you do break a soul contract, think about the responsibility first of what you're, you know, cutting the cord. And this is why I personally am very careful with cord cutting, because again, even that, you know, they've made it so mainstream. It's like, there's a responsibility with that. Like when I made that decision, I had to really ask myself, am I ready to give up this person's spirit for eternity? Not just for this lifetime, like not just, hey, I'm mad at him. I want to get over him. I need to cut the cord. No, like, did I learn the lesson to, like, for eternity, call in a soulmate and distance myself from this energy completely? And I did. And that was so hard. So that's, I'm sure you know, when you do the cord cutting, like that's such a really intense process, right? And I do have one question before the powerful question. How do you feel as you're cutting the cord? Can you feel the energy between the souls, or like, how does that feel for you?
So really, my purpose is to release some of those emotions that have been stored there between you and another person, right? And, you know, it's pretty rare actually that there are strong cords, actual cords between you and another person. You know what I mean? Because there are emotional things going on between you, all of this. And in a lot of it, it's like little lingering things from, you know, sexual encounters, like all of that, that can still be there because your sexual center is your creative center. So you can be stifling your creativity, you know, if we're holding on to, you know, too many energies, like you were talking about, like those little bubbles and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So to release some of that and make space, like you were talking about, it actually, because people feel so much lighter after, it makes me so happy and it's so liberating. People, after you release those emotions, like it's amazing because people can literally see the other person and just not feel any kind of way about them, not feel any resentment, not feel any anything. And that is real freedom, right? When you can look at that other person and just not feel anything, just be like, nah, I learned what I learned.
And that's powerful because anyone listening, like, you got to go really deep into the meditation and feel, you know, and listen to that inner knowing that will tell you. And I had to figure out what was mine. So my human wanted it to be resentment. My human was angry. My human had all these mixed emotions. But then when I went into meditation, I figured out what it was. For me, it was when we separated that year, I'm trying not to get emotional. All the success that I was working towards in my heart and my spirit was for him and I, not just I. Like, I made him part of the success. So when we reunited, it was like, hey, look what I did. It's still a form of validation, though. It was like, hey, look what I did for us. I didn't say it in the 3D, but my soul was like so excited to reunite. And he was somewhere else. And I was like, he was somewhere else in his journey. And I actually had resentment towards myself that in that year, everything I was doing, even though it was for myself, and I did learn so much, and I became this entrepreneur, and my career really skyrocketed and all these things. But subconsciously, I did it for him too. And the resentment was, why didn't you just do it for you? It's like the whole time. So I actually had resentment for myself. And, you know, so the question that I really want to ask you is, what is intuition? And how can someone know that's their intuition versus their logic or their expectation, desire? Because people sometimes think like they desire something, oh, it's my intuition. So what do you think is your intuition?
So realistically, because again, like we all, most of us, I would say the majority of us are very empathic. So number one, you know, to know what's ours and what's not ours, we have to make sure we're cleansing and protecting our energy all the time. Mm. Because otherwise we're going to, you know, we could be feeling some kind of way and it's not even ours, right? So we don't want that. I walk people through a process where every single day in the shower, you rinse all, just like you wash your body, you wash your energy too. You wash all the outside energy right down the drain. Like, whoop. So one of the times that I meditate and tap in is very much in the shower. I'm also, you know, a Scorpio stellium, so I'm a lot of water, right? So I tap in the most and have the best conversations with my spirit team when I'm in the shower or in the water. So, and, you know, whether it's a tub, but normally I'm like in a hurry, taking a shower. So doing that process every day of allowing any outside energy, opinions, any energies that are not mine to transmute and flow right down the drain. And then, you know, it takes practice. It is not something that occurs overnight. It takes practice to be able to set your emotions aside. And it's funny because I said that one time in the Clubhouse room and somebody goes, oh, because that's real easy. Just set your emotions aside. And it's like, nobody said it was easy. It takes practice. You know what I mean? Because like I said, we all desire love. We all desire stability. And that is our birthright to have that. But, you know, in order to really tap into our intuition, we have to make sure all of our energy centers are cleared and open. And that is part of my process before I do any work on anyone. I clear and open the energy centers because a lot of us too, if we've been disappointed or hurt or anything, we start to build up a wall in front of our heart. And that actually prevents the giving and receiving. And people are wondering why their manifestations aren't coming. Well, you're kind of blocking yourself there, bud. So we have to be open, right? And that's a part of it. So when we open our energy centers, that includes, you know, our creativity center, that includes like our self-confidence, our heart, we're literally receiving, you know, we say gut messages. Because a lot of our messages are coming right here. We feel something when something's wrong, when something's not quite right. We're feeling it here. I literally will get sick. So, and then we have, of course, you have your third eye, making sure your third eye is open because that is one of your energy centers. And then your crown chakra, literally how we receive messages from our ancestors, our guides. My grandparents are constantly giving me messages and I'm constantly thanking them. My guides, Archangel Michael, whoever you speak to, get comfortable speaking with them and having conversations because they are there to help. When you're constantly like, I don't know if that's my intuition. Open up your energy centers and ask. you know, the answers can literally fall into your lap if you're open to them. And you have to trust yourself. You literally have to trust yourself. And that's one thing some people have a hard time with too. And that kind of goes back to one of the biggest things that I do with people is cut the cords to their own resentment and fear, feeling of failures and things like that, because that all of that is keeping you from trusting yourself.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. A lot of people are in the spiritual closet because they don't believe that what they're getting is real. And, you know, when I talk to people all the time, and the number one thing is, you know, I sometimes teach very few clients I'll teach to channel. That's only if I could feel energetically they're getting it. But even me, when I first started, just like, you know, you, I didn't trust myself. So to anyone listening, like, the more you trust your, I always say it's like a relationship, a good relationship, right? The more it gives you information, you trust it, the more it's going to start to give you information, right? And when I came out of the spiritual closet, even though it was on social media, I noticed this feeling inside me where Source was now like, channel. And I was like, channel? I'm like, I don't know how to channel. I'm like, don't you need like a certificate, right? Because like every mainstream makes you think you need a certificate for these things. And then I have clients, and I started like asking my clients, I'm like, can I channel for you? And they were like, yeah. So we started going into channeling, and not only was it feeling, but sometimes it's like a projection, almost like a vision appears. And like one time I was sitting there, and I know you know this, but like when I channel, I have to be very careful with what language I deliver the message. I actually, when I channel, I speak super slowly because I have to feel what is the right way to even bring this message out. I can't just be like, oh, hey, I saw this, you know, because sometimes, first of all, sometimes the human won't be ready to receive that. And I know that too, right? I'm like, we're not going to go there right now. Like, they're not ready for that. And then like maybe in a few conversations, I can bring it back if it comes up again. But the number one thing I learned was trust yourself. Like, trust yourself. The more you trust yourself, the more Source trusts you, right? The more you trust yourself, the more you're consistent with it, right? So, and intuition, I always like to say, it's the voice that your logic starts to argue with. It's like it'll tell you something and then your logic is going to start arguing, and then now you're arguing with Source. So pay attention to those things if you're listening. And I've told this story many times. I'll say it very quickly. I one time had this little voice tell me, take your bracelets off. And I was like, I'm not taking my bracelets off. And I went to the airport, and at security, I put them in the bin, got on the airplane, sat on the airplane. I'm like, oh my God, I left them in the bin. And then I thought about it. I was like, the greater power gave me options. It said, hey, I could see you getting on the airplane, putting them in the bin, getting on the plane and losing them, or hey, take them off. And I was like, I'm not taking them off.
You know, we've been given this, you know, some people call it a meat suit or whatever you want to call it. That sounds like a really gross way to say it to me. But like, you know, we've been given this avatar, you know, to use it how we see fit. And, you know, and realistically, this soul is going to transform into many different things and many different forms. And it's been many beautiful places, you know, especially depending on whether it's, you know, a younger soul or older soul or, you know, what have you. But I think, yeah, what we get to see beyond what we see right here is really amazing.
I like to think of it as time traveling. Like every time people talk about time traveling, I'm like, they're just talking about different realms. Annie, thank you so much for doing this. Before we go, where can everybody find you on social media?
Yes. So it's Ms. Annie Parker, MS Annie Parker on Clubhouse, on TikTok, on Instagram, everywhere. Just MS ANNIE PARKER. And yeah, I've just gotten into TikTok, so I'm kind of having fun with it. Like I was very resistant to it at first, and I'm having a lot of fun now. So, and that's part of the manifestation too, is, you know, because I tried it once like a year ago and I just wasn't having fun, and stuff doesn't grow if you're not having fun. So I changed my perspective and started having fun, and here we are. So yeah, I think there's a lot of beautiful things coming, even though the world may seem a little chaotic right now. I think one of the most important things is to, especially right now with the astrology and everything, focus on the joy, the peace, and the stability within yourself, because that just radiates out and can help the world.
Yes, that is so, so true. Thank you so, so very much. And guys, all her social media handles will be in the show notes. So whatever platform you are listening on, just go to the show notes and you will be able to find Annie. Thank you so much.